Hello and welcome back to In the Corner. We are here with episode 23. We have a whole host of topics to talk about today, most importantly being the big PBC pay-per-view over this weekend. On Saturday night in Brooklyn with Gervonta Davis, Lamont Roach Jr. fighting to a draw. Nobody expected that outcome. You know, it was a nightmare night for Tank. We're going to talk all about that. Very controversial with him taking a knee in the ninth round. Should it have been counted knockdown or not? How does that affect the fight? We also in Belfast had another very controversial ending with Paddy Donovan being disqualified after completely dominating and nearly stopping Lewis Crocker. So just like a ton of just really crazy stuff happened. We had the announcement of the Ring Magazine card in Times Square on May 2nd featuring Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, Teofimo Lopez, all against different opponents. Press conference for that on Tuesday. You know, we've got a ton to talk about, so we're just going to jump right into it. First thing, Gervonta Davis, Lamont Roach. I just want to say before we get started that the number one thing that we should take away from this is that Lamont Roach had an incredible performance. I mean, going into this fight, I was like, yeah, Lamont's good, he's good, but he's a 130-pounder coming up. This isn't the kind of guy we want to see Tank fighting. It just didn't make any sense, and there's no interest in it. There was no interest. And then, I mean, like, literally all throughout fight week, I feel like there was no hype. I don't even know how many pay-per-views they sold. I feel like this wasn't a huge talking point until the controversy that happened on the night. The other thing that I think that people need to take into it is that it's not like Tank got his ass whooped. I mean, if you look at that fight, he was up in the first half of the fight. I think that I had him through six rounds. I had Gervonta up. I had him up 4-2. So I gave Tank rounds 2, 3, 5, and 6. So I had Lamont in round 1. Not a lot happened. Tank round 2 and 3. Then Lamont round 4. And then I had Tank going 5, 6, 7. So it would seem like Tank was off to a pretty good start. You know, usually Tank is down, you know, early in his fights. In the Frank Martin fight, he lost all three of the first three rounds on all three judges' scorecards. So that's what we're used to seeing. And if Tank had a pretty good performance early on, and, you know, in those middle rounds, around 5 through 7, it seemed like, okay, he's kind of getting to Roach. And the round 7 was where it started to get more competitive. And then 8, I gave to Roach. And 9, I actually ended up giving to Tank. That is the controversial knee in that round where Tank takes a knee to wipe the hair grease from his eyes. We'll talk more about that. But then I gave the rest of the fight to Roach, and I had it coming out to be a draw. But just think about it. If you give Lamont Roach a knockdown in that round, for me, I had a 10-9, as did one of the judges. If that becomes a 10-8 for Roach, Lamont Roach would win a unanimous decision against Tank. And I'll say this. If either man was to win, it would probably end up being Roach because those swing rounds, I gave one or two of them to Tank. You know, I feel like the rounds that Roach won, he won clearly. The ones that Tank won, you know, there were some that he won clearly, but it was weird. And Roach was the bigger man, which on paper is like, well, he's the 130-pounder. That's surprising. But, you know, I mean, Tank is actually closer naturally to 135 than a lot of the guys at 130 are even. You know, everybody cuts a ton of weight. Tank is a lot smaller than everyone, you know, because he doesn't really cut as much weight. I don't know what he normally walks around at. He probably walks around at maybe like 145, 150, honestly, where a lot of these guys walk at 135 walk around at like 155, 160. You know, Lamont Roach was much bigger than Tank on the night. It seemed like 5-10 pounds bigger than him. But I thought that he turned in a great performance. Again, I didn't think that Tank looked too bad. He just felt that Tank wasn't fully in it, you know? He usually, and like, he just goes for it, and he was, you know, at times, but it did feel like he didn't have as much venom in him. And it also felt like Lamont was just, he was there to take it. And in those later rounds, I thought that Lamont was having the bigger punches. I thought that he was the guy that seemed to have more effect on Tank than Tank had on him at times. I mean, I remember that one point where he straight up wobbled Tank. Tank didn't wobble him. He's the only one of three guys to go the distance with Tank. I think Tank went the distance with somebody over 4 rounds early in his career. And then Pitbull Cruz, of course, went all 12 rounds with him. Lamont Roach is the second to go all 12, and he's the first that Tank did not beat. We need a rematch next. There's no question. This is really bad for Gervonta. I mean, he was already struggling with being the face of boxing because he didn't really want it. He's not finding the best competition. And now it seems that he can't even compete. Yeah, not can't compete, but he can't dominate guys like Roach. So I think they will rematch. And to be honest, I think Tank will probably win the rematch. Usually when fights like this happen and it's really controversial, everyone turns on the A side. They figure their stuff out. And Tank knows what he has to do better. Roach had a perfect night, honestly, except for that he didn't get started as quickly as he should have. And I was frustrated with Roach because when you're going against Tank, you want to get started. You want to get those early rounds. And he didn't. And because he didn't get a lot of those early rounds, he lost. He ended up getting a draw. But, I mean, he really did shock the world. The rematch is necessary. I think the WBA are interested in ordering it immediately. I know that Tank wants it. And Lamont surely wants it. He says he's already signed a contract. I don't know how true that is, but I'm sure that he would do it in a heartbeat. Tank is saying they could do it as early as end of May. I love hearing that from Tank. You know, I don't know if that'll happen, but I like to hear that he's actually active, and it seems like he's wanting to get more active this year genuinely. I can't believe it, but we need to see Gervonta Davis fight Lamont Roach again. You know, I don't know if Tank has ever rematched anyone. I mean, it's just I still can't get over the fact that Tank didn't beat him. It's so crazy to me. You know, and just some other stuff to do with that controversial knee. So it's because he claimed that hair grease was falling from, you know, his hair. He had it done a few days ago. And the grease was getting burned in his eyes, which, you know, is definitely possible. If you remember, a year ago, right around this time, Amanda Serrano had to pull out of her fight on fight night. For a similar reason, she had just dyed her hair a couple days before during fight week, and it got into her eyes while running and burned her, and she wasn't allowed to fight. I don't want to say, oh, Tank's calling BS. I know that the hairdresser came out and said, oh, we did it on Wednesday. He went through all week. Fine. You know, I mean, like, this is BS. I don't even use hair grease. I mean, he said hair grease. He doesn't know what it is. I do think that it was probably some kind of chemical that was still in the hair 3 days later, got into his eyes. It's whatever. But if you take a knee, you can't do that. I know the Tank did find some nift in the rule book where it says, oh, if you go to wipe your eye or something, that's okay. But you don't take the knee. You say, hey, I got something in my eye, to the ref, and maybe then. But the fact that Steve Willis, you know, just literally just let Tank the knee. He runs back, and Steve is like, okay. You know, it feels like a little bit of favoritism. You know, I mean, that genuinely probably should have been counted a knockdown. He took a knee. It doesn't matter what it was. He shouldn't have taken a knee. He should have done something else to get it out of his eye. But, you know, what's interesting is that the WBA, New York Commission, they have it under review. And there is a serious chance here that Tank could lose his undefeated record. There's a real, real chance that they may look at this and they may say, that should have been a knockdown, Steve. We're calling it a knockdown. And because of that, they retroactively will remove a point from Tank. Whether he won the round or not, it was a knockdown. They remove a point. Two of those cards were 114-114. That becomes 114-113 for Lamont Roach. The other one was 115-113. So, and I believe that one was the scorecard that had Tank winning. Tank winning round 9. So, you know, they may have... I don't know if you can change it to a 10-8 if it was a 9-10, but regardless, he'd lose a point, and, you know, you'd at least give Roach the split decision win, if not unanimous. So very interesting to see what happens. I mean, I still just can't believe that happened. Just the whole fight. It was a great fight. You know, it was not what we're usually used to seeing with Tank. You usually get a great knockout, not always a great fight. That was a tremendous fight. It took a little bit to get going, but those last, you know, rounds 5 through 10, I thought, or 5 through 12, I thought were phenomenal. I thought they were really exciting, really, really intriguing, really making you think, like, man, what is going on here? Yeah, we need to see a run back. I heard somewhere that Tank, a rep of Tank, sent an offer to Top Rank to fight Loma later this year. Tank is not fighting Loma. They tried to do it once, it didn't happen. I don't think it'll happen this year. And even if this is not Tank ducking Roach to fight Loma, you know, this is Tank setting up another fight for this year. He said he wants to fight 3 times this year. We'll see if that happens. But let's talk about this undercard, because 4 fights on the main card, all kind of world championships, and all went full 12 rounds. So it was a late night, but had some good fights. Co-main event was Gary Antoine Russell dominating Jose Valenzuela. Oh my goodness. I mean, I just want to say this WBA belt at super lightweight, it just keeps on changing hands. You know, I mean, it went from Rolly beat Barroso very controversially, you know, to win the belt when it was vacant. Pitbull stops Rolly in his next fight. Valenzuela outboxes Pitbull in his next fight. And then Russell dominates Valenzuela in this fight. I mean, I don't know what it was. Valenzuela just couldn't get anything going. I had him winning maybe two rounds. One or two of the judges had him winning zero. I mean, it was unbelievable. Russell was just, he was so much pressure. So many powerful shots landed. And Valenzuela just wasn't landing anything, it felt. I mean, I don't know what was going on. I've never seen such a big drop-off in a fighter where people are saying, like, wow, like, look at how tremendous he is. And then down to the bottom, just terrible performance. And you feel bad for him. You know, Gary Anton Russell is now a world champion after losing his last fight. He didn't really deserve this title shot, but he made the most of it and he won. You know, I just can't believe it. And now I'm going to call it, Russell's going to lose his belt whenever he fights next. Just because the WBA belt keeps on changing hands, and for some reason it's cursed. It's going to happen. Same division, Alberto Pueyo narrowly beat Sandor Martin. Martin, I know that some people probably thought Sandor Martin won. It was a very close fight, not the best fight. It was very competitive, so it had its moments. It wasn't as bad as I thought it could have been, but I definitely think Pueyo was the right man. It was either a draw or Pueyo. I can see Martin winning, I can, just not for me. I think Pueyo did more. You know, I think he finished the fight stronger. So he had it on my scorecard. I think I scored a 115-113 for the champ. He retained. So Pueyo and Russell both fought last year. They're both now world champions at 140. You know, adding on to Teofimo Lopez and Richardson Hitchens. And honestly, it may be time to run it back because I need to see some unifications at 140. It seemed Teo and Richardson Hitchens are on a collision course. And now I've been saying that the winners of these two fights need to fight, and now it seems that it may be a rematch. So why not? Let's set it up. Let's do it. And then, of course, opening up the main card, you had Yoannis Tejas dominating another 120-108 near fight over Julian J. Rock Williams. Fantastic performance. Tejas is brilliant. He's such a brilliant fighter. He's WBA interim champ at 154, and I can't believe he got to a world title that fast. I know it's interim, but still, he actually will probably get upgraded to main champ because Crawford is going to go up to Canelo, and who knows if he'll even fight anymore after that. So Tejas probably will in a few months be upgraded to full champion. He's going to have a lot of guys calling him out. So, I mean, he did well against J-Rock Williams. I would have liked a knockout. I would have liked a more, you know, exciting performance because I think he's such an exciting fighter. But really looking forward to see what he does in his career. And then on the prelims, you had Jarrett Hurd losing to Johan Gonzalez, who just would not stop coming at him. Just relentless pressure. Very good performance by him. But, I mean, Jarrett Hurd just had nothing left. All fight. It was hard to watch. It was like, yeah, it's time to hang him up. And he does so after he said he was going to if he lost. And he was a man of his word. Yeah, just didn't look good at all. Couldn't get anything going. Good performance from Gonzalez. He gets the biggest win of his career. And Jarrett Hurd has a good career and ends on it. Let's talk about Belfast. So Lewis Crocker and Paddy Donovan had a crazy, crazy fight. So Paddy Donovan came in and honestly completely dominated Crocker. First two rounds were a little bit close. I only gave Crocker round two. A lot of people didn't give him any rounds. I thought they, you know, round two could have gone his way. The rest of that I gave to Donovan. You know, just a fantastic performance. I mean, he was bringing the fight to Crocker. He was hurting him. He had a headbutt in round. He headbutt a few times, but I think that was mainly because Crocker was putting his head down. And then, you know, as he should, smartly, you know, making a big deal about it. Donovan loses a point in round six. Another one in round eight after dropping Crocker with, I believe it was a body shot at the time. And it seemed like, man, this is really going Donovan's way. Crocker's got nothing. I should have been more confident in picking Donovan. I said Crocker first, and then I switched it to Donovan last minute. You know, I think that he just really just showed, like, he was the better fighter, and I don't know if Crocker's ready for world level yet. He has a lot of flaws in his game, and that was on full display on Saturday. I mean, he just wasn't doing anything. Like, he wasn't being anywhere near as offensive as he should be. He's a big puncher as well. But Donovan just looked phenomenal, minus these headbutts. And then at the end of round eight, it's just, you know, he's getting on to Crocker, he's about to hurt him, and bell rings. And, you know, I can see how Donovan did it. You know, I mean, he's just going, oh, I've got him so close, just one sec. And he puts Crocker down, but the punch is thrown way too late. It's thrown way too late. And it wasn't like Donovan like laid off and then punched him again like 3 seconds after. He was in the middle of a combination, but he didn't stop his combination when he had time to. He kept on doing it for a few seconds after. So, you know, really, really, I mean, it was a very dirty move. And I think the worst part is that Crocker didn't get up. And, dude, if that was 10 seconds earlier, Donovan is a mandatory shot for the world title, and we don't talk about anything, you know. But Crocker didn't get up, and he was knocked out. He had oxygen tank in the corner, but it was late, and the ref called it. And I'm just saying that if Crocker had made that count, ref wouldn't have said anything. He carried on to the next round, maybe would have taken another point, and the fight would have continued. But I think that it was the fact that he stopped him, he hurt him, and he couldn't continue from that late shot. That was, you know, what did it. And you feel so bad for Donovan because at first he thinks he's won, and then he realizes he doesn't. He's crying. He's so emotional. You know, I mean, like, he was right there. He had a brilliant performance. He hurt himself by not stopping and by, you know, doing these headbutts, which I know he wasn't intentionally doing them, but just having a bad approach, and you just feel so bad for him. And then Crocker, you know, I mean, like, I'm gonna be honest. I really didn't like how Crocker handled this. He gets up, and when he wins, he's flexing his arms, and I'm like, dude, you did not win, and you know that. And then, you know, he says, oh yeah, didn't win the way I wanted to. I'm like, yeah, you got destroyed. Like, it doesn't matter. Did Patty deserve to win because of what happened? No, maybe not. But he totally beat you. Like, undeniably, he totally just dominated you. And it seemed like Crocker saying, oh, you know, like, are we going to do a rematch next? He's like, oh, you know, we'll look into it and stuff. Yeah, no, it sounds like Crocker's going to try and run away from this and get himself a shot at the world title, which IBF is apparently looking into ordering a rematch. They need to, because you cannot let Crocker go and be like, yeah, give me the world title shot. When he got it on a technicality after getting his ass whooped. He does not deserve the world title shot. Paddy Donovan does, but he also doesn't. So I just think that they need to run it back. I think they're going to even try and appeal the decision. I don't know if they should do that. Maybe get it to a no contest. I mean, Donovan's got an L on his record now, but, you know, it's with an asterisk next to it, as does Crocker's win. So run it back. It was a fantastic fight. You know, fantastic buildup, fantastic crowd. Let's just do it again later in the year. You had Craig Richards, Patty McCrory in the main event. You know, this was a fight I was really excited for, just because I thought it was going to be very competitive, and it wasn't. Early on, it was like, okay, who's really winning here? And then Craig Richards just starts to just be the cleaner punch, cleaner man, you know, just doing his stuff more effectively. And it's one of those things where you don't even realize how much of an effect he's having on Capati until he's just done. And, you know, lands a body shot on McCrory, and just like that, corner throws in the towel from it, and they're saying, yeah, we're done. You know, good decision from them. Fantastic performance from Craig Richards. I feel like Patty McCrory may have met his ceiling. You know, lost to Berlanga. His fight with Castillo in November was a little bit dicey, and now this one to Craig Richards. Craig Richards shows he's still on domestic level. I feel like every single time he gets right back up to the top, and then he loses. You know, he just fought Willie Hutchinson, felt like he was going to win. You know, a shot at a world title maybe, and he loses. So we'll see what they do with him next. I'm not really sure who you fight from here. But, you know, he's a good fighter. He's fun to watch. Good talent. And he's still got some punches to give, you could say. What else was on that card? You had Kurt Walker and Leon Woodstock. So Walker looked phenomenal early in this fight. And then I feel like he just let himself get away, let the fight get away from him. He still won, but it was a majority decision. I only had him winning 96-94. He really could have won that 98-92, maybe even more. It was just that he looks so good, but he's got to work on his conditioning, because Woodstock would not stop coming at him. And Walker was kind of matching that energy early on while he could. And then, you know, it wasn't that Woodstock was hurting Walker at all. Walker just couldn't meet the volume. He couldn't compete with it. And that cost him one of the judges' scorecards, and nearly could have cost him the fight. It didn't. He still looked good. He's just really got to work on that, but he is a very good talent. Stephen Ward upset Tommy McCarthy in the first fight of the main broadcast, stopping him in round six. I mean, I didn't even think that McCarthy looked like bad or anything. You know, I thought that he was actually, of the rounds he didn't get hurt in, I thought he was winning. I thought that he was boxing better. It just showed that Stephen Ward was the bigger puncher, And, you know, I mean, and there wasn't really much McCarthy could do to stop it. And he was just, his chin was just getting taken by Ward. And round six, great stoppage. And that's just it for the fight. That's seven losses now for McCarthy. Like, I think he's lost, what, like three in his last four or something like that. So I think it's done. Or, you know, he had a pretty good career. I don't think there's any need to keep going. I don't know what level you can fight at from here. You know, some pretty good fights in the prelims. Oh, I want to talk about this. Shauna Brown and Elif Nurturan. Nurturan stopped Shauna Brown in, like, I think it was, like, what, like 47 seconds, I think was the time. You rarely see that in women's boxing. Great first round TKO. Brown just got shot really bad. You know, gets up and she's like, I can't keep doing it. No, I'm done. That hurt. And apparently, I don't know if that was an official eliminator or, you know, a winner of that would have a good ranking, but they're saying Nurturan could really be set up for Caroline Dubois' title fight next. That seems like a fight Boxer would take for. You know, it's one that Dubois would probably win, but hell of a performance. Aaron Bowen had a good return over six rounds, as did Jack O'Neill. Rudy Farrell beat Gerard Hughes. They had a draw a year or two ago. And Farrell set that right by honestly dominating Hughes. I had him winning 79-73, as did the scoring referee. You know, good performance from him, used his length, and looked pretty good. Subriel Matias, Gabriel Goyaz, Valenzuela, I'll go through these quicker. You know, good win. Really good Mexico-Puerto Rico matchup there. You know, it was really entertaining. You know, Matias lost the first two rounds, I thought. And then it was two rounds for Matias. Then it was two rounds for Valenzuela. And then Matias started to get back in there and stopped him in the eighth round. I think it was a body shot. I mean, really just exciting fight. Matias just showed his power. I thought Valenzuela brought the fight to Matias as well. But like almost everyone does, you just can't be in there with Matias. He will just rip you apart. The issue, Matias is now mandatory for the IBF championship against Richardson Hitchens. And I think if Matias gets to Hitchens, it could be a short night. But I don't know if he will. I think Hitchens can be a nightmare matchup for Matias. You know, he'll just outbox him for 12 rounds. Could dominate him worse than Leomparo did. He dominated Leomparo, honestly. So, you know, we'll see what happens if that fight comes to fruition. Alfredo Santiago could get a shot at the winner of Teofimo Lopez, Arnold Barboza Jr. We'll talk about that fight in a minute. But really good performance over Javier Fortuna. You know, honestly, made for retired Fortuna, just dominated him for eight rounds before the corner threw in the towel. He looked really, really good. He's having a very good career resurgence here. Fought Devin Haney, I think, for the world title like 5-6 years ago. You know, he is now, he beat Angel Fierro. He had a good fight in November, a good win. Now he's got a win over Javier Fortuna and is number one with the WBO. So he could genuinely get a world title shot soon, or at least another big fight. And then you had Nestor Bravo, previously undefeated, losing to Zolizani and Don Jenny. And Don Jenny, if you remember, he had a really good fight with Murataya in March of 2024. A lot of people thought he could have won that one as well, but he came out really good in this fight. And, you know, I had him winning, what? Now I had him winning 95-94, you know, so it was still close. I thought Bravo came back really well in the last few rounds, and Bravo did score a knockdown in the second round, which ultimately... you know, but those were the only rounds that I thought I had him winning. And Don Jenny just dominated the middle portion of this fight and just completely outboxed Bravo. Bravo was, you know, like so awkward in how he was getting hit and just not taking the shots well. And, you know, lost a WBA Intercontinental title opportunity. And then you had Price Taylor open up the card. You know, he's a really fun to watch heavyweight prospect. He just runs straight at his opponent and it goes for him. That's good, but could be very bad. You don't want to run at the wrong person, especially as a heavyweight. We saw it in this fight. He got wobbled for a second. Recovered quickly, got the finish, but, you know, you never know what can happen in there with the big guys. UFC had their third fight night at the Apex in 2025, headlined by Manel Kopp, you know, pretty much dominating Asu Almabayev in the flyweight division. In the main event, he stopped him in round three with a good TKO win. I mean, he totally dominated Almabayev, which was kind of surprising. I thought Almabayev would take this fight. Kopp honestly could set himself up for a world title shot there, if not a very high-level fight. I think that the plan is to do Pantoja versus Cara France. I'm not really sure who there is for Kopp to fight. I think is Brandon Moreno is fighting Steve Ursag. Brandon Royval has a fight booked, I believe. If not, that could be a good one. You know, I mean, yeah, there's a few good fights out there for Cop, but, you know, he was ranked number six in this fight, and we'll probably get a boost in the rankings. Cody Brundage and Julian Marquez had an absolute war that only lasted one round, with Brundage coming out on top. Tremendous fight there. You know, they really just both went at it. It seemed like Marquez was going to stop him, and then Brundage actually, once he took over, it took him a lot less time, you know, to actually get that stoppage, just because Marquez just wasn't fighting anymore. He got knocked down, and he was defending himself but not fighting back. Nasrat Haqparast and Esteban Ribovic had a brilliant fight, I thought. Personally, I thought Ribovic could have gotten the decision. I had him winning round two and three. Haqparast winning round one, but you know, a lot of the judges gave Haqparast both round one and three. Round one and two. They all gave him round two, which I was surprised by, because I thought that Ribovic won that round. Regardless, not mad at the decision. It was a really, really good 50-50, you know, close fight. Would have been happy with either guy winning. Haider Amil and William Gomez had another fight of the night contender over three rounds. Amil got that one 29-28. I believe he deserved it. That first round particularly was just so much fun to watch. I really enjoyed that fight. Sam Patterson upset the undefeated Danny Barlow with a first round knockout. Just, you know, after honestly losing the first 3 minutes or so, just, you know, hurt Barlow, and Barlow couldn't recover, and he just went after him and put him out. And then, I mean, we'll talk about knockout of the year contender, Mario Pinto. Oh my goodness. I thought he lost the first round with Austin Lane, and then one shot just puts Lane out. That was scary. Brilliant knockout. Yeah, he should honestly be on the shortlist for knockout of the year contender. And then the first few fights of the card, really nothing to write home about. I thought it was a boring fight night until the second half of it, which I thought was really cool. Yeah, so I enjoyed it. Ryan Garner, Salvador Jimenez, it was okay. You know, I mean, Garner absolutely dominated Jimenez, and it was a little bit disappointing just because I was like, come on, man, do something. Both on Garner's side, where he couldn't get the stoppage, and then on Jimenez's side, where he was just doing nothing to compete. Garner, I think, is a really good fighter. We just got to get him a better opponent. We just got to get him tougher opposition so we can really see how good he is. And then we had Louis Edmondson in the co-main event against Oluwatosin Kijawa in a dreadful fight to watch. I think Edmondson is one of the most boring fighters in British boxing. I think that all of the British, a lot of the British fighters, especially the prospects, can be really boring. And I mainly am just kind of salty about Edmondson because I thought that he broad daylight robbed Dan Aziz in October of the British and Commonwealth Championships. I thought that he won a couple rounds in that fight and he got the decision. And it was just one of those things where I felt that he didn't do enough. I mean, literally, he barely throws 15 punches a round, maybe. And Kijawa honestly did the same, and Kijawa had some good rounds here. I think I ended up having Edmondson winning the fight 116-112, which a lot of the judges had a way wider than that. I thought Kijawa did okay, but not great. It was a pretty hard watch. But Edmondson did definitely win the fight and did well. Just not my cup of tea at all. And then you had some other decent fights on the card. Mace Rueg, Liam Dillon. Dillon was the only other one that wasn't just like a six-rounder or something like that. That was a pretty good scrap. Reg tried his best and looked good in trying to compete with Dillon. But it was ultimately just Dillon was just the more experienced fighter, and he wins a split decision, getting himself a Commonwealth Silver Championship at a new weight class. But, you know, good fight from both. Liam Dillon is a really exciting fighter to watch. I really enjoy whenever he's on. And then you had Henry Turner return after a loss to Reese McMillan. Not Reese McMillan. Jack Rafferty. I got him confused because McMillan just fought Rafferty. Listen, Turner was winning the first half of that fight. People forget that. Yeah, Rafferty stopped him and looked phenomenal. But, I mean, Henry Turner is still a pretty good domestic-level fighter, and they dropped him down the ranks pretty hard. I think it's time to move him up the levels. I'm glad he made a statement here with a first-round TKO. You know, so let's keep doing more of that. John Isaacs fought. He got dropped in the second round. I just want to mention that. Recovered pretty well, but it seemed like we were going to get a cool upset there. We didn't. And then Carol Atama had a third round stoppage. older brother of Moses Atauma, who has already had another loss in his career, but he is now 13-1 with, I think, 8 knockouts, is it? So, you know, pretty good fighter. Don't know if he'll ever reach the heights his brother can, but yeah, hopefully he's back out soon, because he had a decent layoff, I believe. What else? We had on Saturday as well, Liam Wilson rematch Yusuf Dib. Again, listen, I was not able to watch that fight because No Limit doesn't have a U.S. broadcast partner. But I did see that they went the distance and Wilson hurt Dib really early in the fight and then just, like, let himself get carried away. And, like, apparently Dib made it really competitive. And it was, you know, quite a close fight at the end, but Wilson still got the decision victory. I look forward to watching it. I heard it was actually a pretty good competitive fight, but, you know, again, just kind of interesting that he didn't capitalize earlier after, I think he dropped Dib both in round 1 and 2 and then just didn't do anything after that. So, interesting there. BKFC had an incredible fight night on Friday night in Albuquerque, I thought. Keith Richardson was stopped by Beqzad Usmanov in just one round in the main event. Literally, other than that, none of the fights went the distance except for, I think it was the co-main event, yeah, between Donald Sanchez and Harrison Aiken, which there was still a fair amount of knockdowns in. Really good fight. You know, a lot of really good fights on that card. Just want to shout out Eric Dodson and Van Vo. They had a total of 8 knockdowns combined between them, which is just ridiculous. 8 knockdowns. I think that Dodson was knocked down 5 times, Vo knocked down 3 times, and then Dodson actually stopped Vo in the 3rd round to get the win after being dropped 5 times. So unbelievable stuff. I mean, BKFC, if you're not on the train, hop on, because, oh boy, we're going to the moon. And then you had Eduardo Hernandez returning against Rene Tellez Giron. He dominated Giron. I had him winning 118-110 against scorecards a little bit more wide. But, yeah, really good performance from Rocky. You know, it seems like he's figuring out his stuff. Fight by fight, he's getting better and better. You know, he still got to work a little bit on his consistency in his gas tank towards the end. But, yeah, he's got to get a world title shot this year, it seems. And then Alexis Barrier was also on that card. You know, heavyweight stoppage after 6 rounds. I believe he's with Matchroom now, so I'm sure we'll see him again, too. Again, soon, I should say. Excuse me. Okay, that is all the fights that happened this weekend. Like I said, we're going to hear more about this Tank and Roach fight. It's under review by the commissions and sanctions involved. Also want to mention that Joe Joyce didn't fight on the Queensberry card. He was supposed to. Would have made that card more interesting because it was kind of lackluster. But I understand why he shouldn't have been fighting at all. He maybe shouldn't be fighting, period, on any fight. But it didn't make sense for him to have a run out before the big Dillian White fight in April. Okay, let's talk about the news that's been going on. We've got a lot of headlines here. I'm going to try and do it as fast as possible. The first one is a big one. We've got Ring Magazine confirming officially their New York City card for May 2nd. It'll be in Times Square, free to fans. It'll be promoted by Matchroom, Golden Boy, and Top Rank. I believe it'll still be a pay-per-view for $25 again, similar to the last Crescendo. Wish it was free, but I won't complain, whatever. I just feel like it should be free if it's free to fans to show up, but I won't complain. Main event, Ryan Garcia, Rolly Romero at welterweight, I think. This will be for the WBA regular welterweight title, which is so stupid. It just doesn't need a title at all. Co-main event, Devin Haney, Jose Ramirez, I think also at welterweight. So these are all 140 guys, even if they're and if they're fighting at welterweight, they're making their debuts there. And then we thought we were going to have Martin McCauley, Efe Ajogba, and an IBF heavyweight eliminator. That is not happening because McCauley was, you know, took the Parker fight on such short notice and got knocked out. So IBF doesn't want to do that fight. They don't want to have him fight then, so it just doesn't make sense to do it. And then you've got, added to the card, surprisingly, Teofimo Lopez versus Arnold Barboza for the WBO and Ring championships. Happy that the Ring, that, you know, they got Tio on there. He is a champion with the Ring, so they're going to make a big deal about that, I'm sure. That'll be your world championship on the card outside of the main event, I guess. I mean, it's crazy they were having three of the big American stars that are all really in the same division and none of them are fighting each other. That is the most boxing thing ever. It's whatever. I mean, we know that after this fight, Garcia and Haney will rematch in October. I think the plan is for Tio to move up to welterweight and fight Jerome Ennis, and the winners of those fights will meet in February, which I don't hate that plan. I just also feel like I wouldn't mind seeing Tio versus Richardson Hitchens. I don't know if he's moving up to welterweight 100% or not, but should Ennis beat Stanionis, should Lopez beat Barboza, if Tio moves up to 147, make that fight next. But I'm really happy with that fight. Arnold Barboza is getting super active. You know, I mean, like he had the fight with Jose Ramirez in November, the win which he won, the win over Jack Catterall in February, and I was going to fight May 2nd. So those are three big fights. He's won the first two with all within 6 months of each other, which is just crazy. That's a lot of activity, you know. And hey, activity is good for you as a fighter. So yeah, excited to see this card. I'm really excited for it. I think it's going to be a lot of really good fights. And the press conference is tomorrow, May 4th. Tuesday, it is going to be hilarious. They're all just going to be talking smack to each other. They got to have a ton of security because, I mean, this is going to be another Eubank Ben situation. But yeah, I'm really excited to see how this press conference goes, how this fight card plays out, what New York City and Times Square looks like. Yeah, very excited to see how it all plays out. Okay, let's run through all these headlines. We have a ton because it's been a long time since I've done another episode, and it's going to be another long time, just letting you know. Next few weeks are kind of crazy. Okay, TKO Boxing already has planned four super fights for 2025-26. I don't know what these super fights could be when you don't have any fighters. They're all locked up with big promoters. Like, I don't understand what this is going to be. I thought TKO was going to have to start from the ground. Maybe they're not, but I don't know what the super fights they have planned are. That's just a little bit weird. Maybe they have super events planned and they've talked to some guys about wanting to link up in the future, but there's no way they have like plans fight that big fights planned ahead for 2026. Cato Taylor, Amanda Serrano closing in on a trilogy deal for America, likely New York. You know, I'm not mad at this. I would have preferred Croke Park, but I also like, if they're going to do the Chantel Cameron rematch, to do that one in Croke Park. And I also would have liked to see this fight in Vegas. I know that both Katie and Amanda would like to fight in Vegas, but if it's not in Vegas and it's going to be in America, I don't dislike New York at all. It's where you had the first fight, and it was tremendous, but apparently there are some very positive negotiations going on between Matchroom and MVP, so very hopeful that happens next because that we need that fight. It will feed families. It could be one of the best trilogies ever in the sport. Apparently, Inoue and Picasso are officially not fighting in May. By the way, it's going to be May 4th, it seems. At first, we thought it was going to be Inoue versus MJ now in May, and then Ramon Cardenas in September. Now it's going to be Cardenas in May is what we're hearing. So I expect that to be announced pretty soon. I don't hate that Inoue is fighting Cardenas. I would just prefer him to go ahead and fight Akhmadaliyev now and then honestly skip Cardenas and just fight Junto Nakatani in September, if we're being honest, because we know that'll be in Japan. He needs to fight Nakatani in Japan before he moves up to featherweight, because the plan is for him to move up to featherweight at the end of the year against Nick Ball, and I need to see Inoue versus Nakatani at 122 before then, please. Mark Chamberlain returns on White Joyce April 5th, so they're going to have some non-heavyweight fighters on the card, which I'm okay with. Mark Chamberlain's going to be out of the ring for, what is that, 5 months? Or no, not five, 7 months. Yeah, 7 months. I got my numbers wrong. You know, I mean, hey, hopefully he returns against a decent opponent. I don't want to see him in, you know, the kind of fight that we just saw Henry Turner in. He's a good fighter. Keep him in a 10-rounder against a decent opponent. Honestly, give me Mark Chamberlain and Liam Dillon. I think that's a good bounce-back opponent. That'll be a really fun, exciting fight that he's got to work hard for. They're both at lightweight now. Do that. Unless Chamberlain's moving up to 140, which is also possible. Chito Vera versus Mario Bautista reported for UFC Des Moines May 3rd. I love that fight. Let's just do it. No questions asked. No hesitation. Love it. Book it. You know, hope that Vera wins that one. He's lost two in a row now after the O'Malley loss. You know, I think that Bautista was the guy who robbed Jose Aldo in October. So he needs to be corrected for that. Bakram Murtazali, Virgil Ortiz potentially. You know, they Mertesilli posts on Twitter, 23-0 versus 23-0. And then Ortiz responded with like the eyes emoji. I hope that happens. Genuinely, that is the best fight in the division. I know that Fedora is there. I know that Boachuk is there. I know that Madrimov is there. I know that Crawford's there, kind of. I know Taez is there. I know Zayas is there. I know Conwell's there. There's a ton of guys in this division. But I think Mirtazaliev and Ortiz are probably the two best fighters in it right now. And they're both heavy hitters. That'll be an absolute carnage, chaos, brutal war. I need that fight next, please. Oh, my goodness. Charlie Sheehy on the Martinez-James card, the Pro Box card. I just noticed this and was a little bit interested. Was he dropped from Top Rank? He seemed to be a pretty good prospect that they were building. I think he's won with them, you know, and I don't understand why he's fighting on this Pro Box card now, but just wanted to mention that. It's a little bit odd. He's still undefeated. Don't know. Fumalele Kafu versus Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez is now off. Champ is instead headed home to South Africa to do a fight, I think in May or June, to defend his WBO, 115 title. And Chocolatito could be moving up to bantamweight. You know, I would have really liked to see this fight. I think it's a decent fight. I think that it gives Chocolatito a chance to become world champion again. But I know that Chocolatito wanted to move up to 118, so I'm totally okay with that. Dubois' illness was finally revealed. He had a virus which had led to him having swollen glands and an ear infection. If we had heard this a day after, I wouldn't be at all like, okay, cool, whatever. But it just feels kind of weird. And I don't want to say Dubois pulled out, but it just feels kind of weird that we didn't get any word for so long on what happened. I know that they're not the most vocal crew in the Dubois camp, but it's just really weird that they, just straight up didn't have any kind of news about what really happened, why he was sick, why he pulled out last minute. But we now know. Josh Padley signs with Matchroom. Super happy for him. He's retiring as an electrician. He deserves this. I don't know why. I just thought it was going to be Frank Warren that scooped him up. It was Eddie Hearn. Let's see what kind of fights they have for him. I think he's got some good guys he could fight. I really liked the Maxi Hughes fight. That's not happening anymore, but we'll talk about what is happening with Maxi Hughes because it's pretty exciting. That'll be later on the show. Tony Ferguson, Dylan Danis on GFL, was just announced. I think it's like LA versus New York or something like that, whatever the teams they're doing. I can't wait for GFL's first event. It's either going to be really cool or an absolute train wreck. Probably the latter, but just excited to see what happens. I like this matchup. I think it's just funny. You know, you have Ferguson who's on, a 7-8 fight losing streak. Dylan Danis, who sucks. It's weird that they announced it because he has a fight with KSI at the end of March, but we know he's headed to GFL after that. And by the way, they also have a press conference tomorrow for that Misfits event, so a lot of crazy pressers happening on Tuesday. But, I think this is a funny matchup. Hopefully Ferguson wins. Like, this is the bottom of the bottom if he loses this. But hopefully he can pull it out of the bag and shut up Dylan Danis even more, whatever's required to do it. Maciej Suleski stopped Ali Akhmedov in the 10th round, the 10th and final round after multiple knockdowns. So I don't think that Akhmedov was undefeated. Suleski, if you remember, was most recently beaten and stopped by Diego Pacheco in August. I don't know if he's fought since then, but I think it was on Friday, or at least sometime in the last week, he beat up Ali Akhmedov. Very surprising. You know, that just seemed like a fight that Akhmedov was a rising contender at 168. And, I don't know what happened, but Suleski beat him up. And he is, now been stopped after getting pretty close. Not pretty close, but closer to a bigger fight in the division. So, yeah, I don't know what happened there, but just wanted to mention, very interesting. Hope we hear soon about what's going to happen with Akhmedov next. It's now his second loss, I think. Foster versus Wilson in Australia in the summer. Yes, this was something mentioned on the No Limit broadcast, apparently, that Liam Wilson and Oshaki Foster could fight in like May, June, July in Australia. I hate this, you know, because I really think that Foster needs to fight Emmanuel Navarrete, who we also learned is reportedly set to return May 10th in San Diego versus either Charlie Suarez or Andres Cortes. Both these guys were supposed to fight in September on the Jaime Munguia Eric Bazinian card. It didn't happen. You know, I mean, that would have been a good fight there, and then maybe that would have been an eliminator for the WBO super featherweight title, but Navarrete and Foster are both fighting for that number one spot at 130, and they need to unify. And it seemed like that was going to be the move, and I don't know what happened, but now it isn't. But it's just really disappointing. That's another division that desperately needs to unify. But yeah, I have no interest in seeing Foster versus Wilson. It's a stupid fight. Foster will dominate him the same way that he has already been beaten by Navarrete and Valdez. Yoenly Hernandez versus Shane Mosley Jr. on the Canelo versus Skull undercard. Apparently that's already been confirmed or at least reported on. I love that fight. That is the perfect eliminator. I think they're 1-2 at the WBA. Winner of that will go on to fight Arislandi Lara. Has to. I wouldn't be mad if they chucked either one of them in with Lara right now, but I like that fight both for both of them. You know, just to before they go up to a world championship, just to give themselves one last, you know, good test, good fight, and then off to the glory you go. Dalton Smith potentially is returning to Sheffield on April 19th. We don't know who this would be against. Yeah, I'm interested to see who they throw in there with him. We know Pierce O'Leary and John Fernandez will fight for the European. Smith is mandatory for Alberto Puello next. I would like to see that fight happen. That's obviously not going to happen April 19th, but you know, we'll see what they do with Dalton Smith in the interim. Richardson Hitchens, George Kambosos potentially could happen in New York City in June. We know that Matchroom is working to get a New York fight for Hitchens around that time. And Kambosos, if he gets a good win over Jordan in his return to Sydney on March 22nd, he could be ready to go in and fight for the world title against Hitchens. Do I think he deserves a world title shot with how much stuff there is going on at 140? No, but I don't hate it. Jim Lampley is going to be returning on the Times Square card. He's going to be commentating on May 2nd. Very big, famous, one of the best commentators of all time, at least for boxing. For like 30 years, so cool that they're bringing him back. And it seems that Todd Grisham is getting pushed out. He got pushed out a little bit by Adam Scott on some of the Saudi cards, at least in the UK. And I hate that because I know people really shit on the DAZN crew, but I think that they're fun. I think they're really fun to listen to. They have fun with it. I think that they're still good pundits. I really enjoy listening to their broadcast team. But I'm excited to hear from Jim Lampley on May 2nd. Boots, Stanionis, we've got a few card updates for undercards and stuff. Before we wrap it up, Boots and Stanionis, their undercard. Ray Ford is going to be the co-main event. We knew this. Got a lot of options. We heard about Henry LeBron. Good fight. We heard about Abraham Nova. Really like that fight. Petufo Diaz, okay. And then Albert Bell, which I don't know if that's the best out of the options. I personally like Nova, but I also really like Bell. He's undefeated. That may be the best one. But apparently Matchroom sent him an offer, and he's already accepted. So, hey, I will not complain at all, Ford versus Bell. And winner of that, I want to see challenge for the world title, especially if it's Ford. I think he's a fantastic fighter, and I think that he's ready for a second world title shot in a new division. Also on that card, we'll have Arturo Cardenas versus Christian Carto. Carto is trained by Bozy Ennis. So it's a little bit interesting there. Cardenas. I think that he's a pretty good fighter, but he hasn't always looked stellar in the past. So we're going to see him tested here and see how good he really is, because I don't think he'll be a world champion just from the performances I've seen. GBM announced actually a really big show for May 23rd. Very excited to see this show, honestly. I've been a fan of GBM and the work that they've done. You know, they're the boxing promoter, honestly. It's them and ProBox TV, I'd say, that I feel like they're taking the biggest swings in 2025. You know, I mean, ProBox probably a little bit more so, but at least on the British scene, GBM is getting there to really be competitive with the other people. You've got Terry Harper, Natalie Zimmerman in the main event, WBO World Lightweight Championship, so they're promoting their first world title fight. This will be in Doncaster at the EcoPower Stadium. It's outdoors. It's a stadium. It's 15,000, which is really big for them for a GBM show. Outdoors. It's huge for them. I'm really excited for it. It'll be Friday, May 23rd. Also on the card, you got Maxie Hughes versus Archie Sharp. That's a fantastic, fantastic fight. At lightweight WBA Intercontinental Championship. Sharp has moved up after his loss to Ryan Garner. He was supposed to be him versus Liam Dillon on Saturday, actually, but that fight didn't happen for whatever reason. I think he was injured and then took this opportunity, but Great fight there. You've got Gallagher Jones. They're rescheduling that. That'll be for the British Commonwealth and WBO European Super Bantamweight titles. Reese Mould returns against, I can't remember his first name, but Sylvester. He fought Sam Noakes last year. That'll be for the IBO Continental Lightweight title. And then Jimmy Joe Flint returns against Lamuse for the IBO Continental Super Lightweight Championship. Flint obviously beat Campbell Hatton twice in 2024. Really, really solid show from them there. You know, I'm very excited to see that card. I think it's going to be awesome. You know, it'll be a Friday. Honestly, a big show in the UK, so props to them. They did very well. And I wonder what is going on there because they – Terry Harper was with Matchroom. Archie Sharp was with Queensberry. I thought Maxie Hughes may have been with Matchroom as well, but he's also fought with GBM recently, of course. So kind of feels like they're borrowing some other fighters. But, you know, I mean, those Eddie and Frank support them, I guess. And that's awesome. I want more support. I want more big promotions in the UK, in the US, around the world. Yeah, very excited for that. Golden Boy announced their undercard for William Zepeda, Tevin Farmer 2. I was more interested to see if this, how much of this was like a Golden Boy card or if it was a Golden Boy co-promotion with some Mexican promotion because Golden Boy doesn't really promote outside of the U.S. But this appears to be full-on Golden Boy promotion. Co-main event will be Oscar Collazo defending his WBA, WBO, and Ring Magazine minimum weight titles against Edwin Cano in the co-main event. I would like to see him unify after this. If he's going to stay at 105, go for Undisputed. If not, just move up. I know that he's trying to go for Undisputed, you know, but it may be hard to. I would not be mad if he moved up to 108. He's unified at 105. He's obviously the best fighter in the division. And there's bigger fights at 108 for him. And then he can go up a few divisions because 105 and 108 are pretty dry. And then 112 and up, it gets interesting. Yocasta Valle versus Marlon Esparza will open up the broadcast. That's crazy they're opening it up because that is one hell of a fight. Yeah, you know, Valle, of course, is a former minimum weight champion. Esparza, a former flyweight champion. I think Valle is actually multiple divisions champion. So really good competitive fight. I'd say Yocasta Valle probably wins that. But, you know, it's a really good match. I like that Golden Boy is making that fight between two. Honestly, they're two of their best women's fighters. You know, it's them and then Gabriela Fandora, who's the number one. But they've got some. They've only got a few really good women's fighters, and you know they're putting matching them up, which I like. Robin Safar returns. Obviously, he beats Sergey Kovalev on the Ring of Fire Fury Usyk 1 undercard. Very good performance. Haven't really seen him since then, I don't think. But Golden Boy signed him up. He returns on this card. Excited to see that. And then Joselito Vasquez, who is a 2016 Mexican Olympian. Don't think he's with Golden Boy. I don't know how many pro fights he's had because he was an Olympian a while ago, but he's also on that card. So interesting. Pretty good card. Excited to see that. I'm really a big fan of William Zepeda. And I'm not mad at this rematch, but, you know, I hopefully the winner of this, which will probably be Zepeda, goes on to fight Shakur for the world championship because we know it's not going to be Tank anymore. Nick Ball, TJ Doheny is confirmed for DAZN outside of the UK. Love that. This is the last Queensberry TNT sports show and we will be able to watch it in the US. You know, this is not a shock or anything. Just wanted to add that. And then last thing, Keyshawn Davis wants Andy Cruz before he eventually moves to 140. You know, I think this is him kind of let it marinate. We know he'll be at 135 for a good bit. The Keyshawn and Andy Cruz fight is a great one. Are there better fights for Keyshawn? Yeah, you've got Lomachenko, maybe. You've got Gervonta Davis, of course. But I think Andy Cruz is right there for next. Maybe Gabriel Murataya if he wins the fight against Abdullayev. And even if it's Abdullayev, but he could unify with whatever goes on with the IBF and then Tank Davis. We know he won't fight Shakur, but other than that, I want to see Andy Cruz. I mean, they've got beef there. It's a really good matchup. And when the Keyshawn will probably win. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. That's all I've got for today. Thank you so much for listening. Next episode will be out Thursday, I think. And then after that, it's going to be another long time before I'm back able to get caught up and do another episode. You know, it's a big week going on. I'm very busy. I'm out of town all week. both this weekend and next weekend. So we'll try and do my best, but we have UFC 313 on Saturday. Very excited. Won't be able to watch it live at all, which sucks, but, you know, we'll figure it out. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back Thursday, and then after that, probably beginning of next week. Thank you for listening. I've been Cash. Follow on whatever platforms, X, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever else you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Peace out.